Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a conversation with authors, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness with Doug Brook and Maureen Hartney, authors of the IBM Center Report, Managing the Government's Executive Talent. Doug, would you describe the purpose of the government-wide executive management corps? What responsibilities and duties would this group perform, and why is it so important to create this group?
The creation of an executive management corps, what we're calling an executive management corps, really is at the heart of all of our recommendations. And we view this executive management corps as being comprised of both political and career leaders who hold senior management positions, positions that have been identified as being senior management positions and that require an enterprise-wide perspective on their duties and who have a shared sense of purpose and common priorities. The idea here is that departments and agencies, along with consulting with OMB and the Office of Personnel Management and the President's Management Council and whatever, would designate a subgroup of political and career executives as members of this government-wide executive management corps. Now, I don't think we're talking about giving them logo ties and scarves or fins on their lapel. But the idea of creating an executive management corps is to acknowledge that there is this group of people who are especially responsible for managing complex organizations and challenging programs in the federal government. This subgroup, I think, would be recognized and as being something that the administration, that the White House and its agencies would want to interface with and would want to manage. And so I would think that the new administration would convene the members of the Executive Management Corps to share their management priorities and goals. You know, the president is a policy leader and the commander in chief, but he or she is also the CEO of a civilian workforce. And the president needs to address these folks at the start of the term. And so I think it's important that the executive management corps be identified, be brought together, that clear objectives be set, that this bringing together signals the importance that management brings to the achievement of the president's priorities and recognizing the potential contributions of this group. You know, beginning in February of 2018, the administration is required for the first time to submit a strategic management plan just as the president's budget is submitted to Congress in the first Monday in February. And it seems to me that that would be a perfect time for the administration to convene a meeting of this newly designated executive management corps.
As a follow-up, what are some of the challenges to establishing a government-wide executive management corps, and what actions should be taken to establish it?
I think there are some key challenges in each step of actually implementing this idea, but all of these challenges can definitely be overcome. One of the challenges, of course, when you're starting out is that you have to identify all the positions that can be categorized as that executive management level. So what are those positions that have significant managerial duties? And one way you could do that is to look in the plum book. So all positions open to political appointees are going to be compiled into the policy and supporting positions known as the plum book. And in 2016, that's going to be published by the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. So the transition team could use that to identify some of the positions that can be categorized in the political executive management corps roles. Another example of something that could be challenging is going to be recruiting and retaining people that might have the management experience that you really want for these positions. But these appointees could come from the private sector, the nonprofit sector, state and local governments, and the active or retired career civilian and military ranks of the federal government. So you have a large pool of people that you can recruit and retain, and if you retool the way you do that, then you might have the talent that you really want for your political appointees and your senior executive service. And then after creating the corps and finding the people for it, of course, the executive management corps is going to require active management. So you have to create targeted orientations like we talked about, and then again, the establish the establishment of performance agreements, so you can really start to align what the president wants to do and then how each agency is going to go about doing it.
Doug, the performance of department and agency executive management teams is another critical success factor for the implementation of the next administration's priorities. So what are joint executive management teams? What are the benefits of creating department and agency level joint teams?
Well, when we talked about the executive management corps, we were talking about a set of people who are across the entire federal government as having been identified as holding these senior management positions. But we also envision that these teams exist in the departments and agencies of the executive branch as well. And so our thought is that what we called joint executive management teams would be established in the individual departments and agencies, where political and career executives could then, you know, share ownership for mission outcomes, for the ability to work across departmental and functional boundaries to try to achieve the goals of the organization. So establishing this government-wide core is only part of the issue. We need to establish these teams in the agencies as well. And we want them to have shared leadership. I think an important part of the concept of these teams is the idea that political and career senior executives share leadership in the organization, which means broadly sharing power and influence rather than having it centralized in the hands of a single individual, whether it's the political head of the agency or a senior career deputy. So the need for these teams is driven by the realization that none of these senior leaders has the time or the relevant information to make all the decisions in a complex, rapidly changing organization. So couple those demanding duties with short response times that are often required in government, and it becomes clear to us that leadership teams in the departments and agencies need to be established to share leadership across these organizations.
As a follow-up, Maureen, what are some of the key challenges to establishing these joint teams, and what actions should be taken to do this?
So I think the creation of these teams is probably the most radical change that we suggest in the report. So it follows findings that top management teams, like Doug said, can be far more effective than single leaders with that shared leadership concept. But that being said, they're definitely going to be a major challenge to create, because I think we know that government is certainly resistant to change, and so are people. And this could be a major sort of shakeup in how leadership is determined in agencies. So that's one challenge, certainly. Another challenge is that the teams have to be managed by the government. So you have to create the performance plans, but also you have to create those common elements tied to those mission outcomes that are going to be key with the whole team and not just one person or another person.
So Maureen, what are the key elements that comprise top management teams, TMTs, and what are the four types of complementary leadership identified for effective team management?
Yeah, when we were doing research on leadership, we kept coming across the top management team concept, and research showed that the top management teams rely on complementarity, so how people complement other people in different ways. So the ability to do things and teams to do things that individuals and non-complementary teams cannot. So you have one person working alone, that's less effective than this really effective team that you could create. And then if a team is not able to communicate, or if they don't complement each other well, then they're not able to achieve their goals also. So we have four types of complementary leadership, and they are identified for those effective management teams. So the first is task complementarity. So in that, you're dividing management responsibilities into these coherent blocks of tasks that can be used to respond to that increasing demands on leadership's time. So if you have people divided into functions or tasks, that might be a more effective way of dealing with the massive amount of work that people have to deal with in government jobs. A second type of complementary leadership is expertise complementarity. So you have different people with different levels of expertise, and that might actually lead to formation of teams that are able to produce more effective results for you. So it's not just people that have, you know, above 25 years of experience, but you have different sets of backgrounds. And so that gives you a little bit more diversity. The third type of complementary leadership is cognitive complementarity. So how different individuals process information differently might help overcome individual leaders' sort of inabilities to comprehend and then act on all aspects of a problem, a strategy, an issue, a decision. So the way different people sort of think outside the box, or if they have different sizes of the box, or if somebody is thinking in a circle, you know, then you have different people approaching a problem different ways, and that might lead you to the best solution. And that's another possibility for a top management team. And then the final complementarity issue that we have is role complementarity. So you can have members of a top management team assume different leadership and social roles in the organization. So you could have somebody be a CEO or CFO, and then that could also be a better way to manage a team as well. So you could have different roles, and then you have different backgrounds, and then you go forth and a team is better able to approach a problem and then give you either more diverse solutions or perhaps a more effective solution to your problem.
Doug, your report recommends the creation of a political executive management corps and a career executive management corps. What are the benefits of doing this? How can we better identify qualified appointees? And how do these management corps kind of accelerate the career political collaboration that we want?
Well, I think we confess to some organizational complexity here in our recommendations. But having established the idea of an executive management corps across the government and making all of these arguments for bringing the career and the political appointees together into shared management teams, we also recognize that they're different, that political appointees and members of the senior executive service are different in their careers and then different in how they're managed, and they're different in what their expectations are. And so we view the executive management corps as having two elements. One is the political executive management corps, and the second is the career executive management corps. The political executive management corps would be those political appointees whose positions require significant management experience and that need to be filled with highly qualified candidates. And those we would put into or designate as members of this political executive management corps. And their job would be to take primary responsibility for driving the management aspects of the policy priorities of the administration. And the political executive management corps would largely be directed by the Office of Presidential Personnel and probably OMB, because there's a policy element to what they have to do. On the other hand, we also view a career executive management corps as being comprised of those career senior executives who are designated as being members of that overall executive management corps. The career executive management corps, of course, then would be overseen more by not only the OMB, but also OPM. And their careers could be managed there, as most careers are managed through OPM and the human resources organizations in the departments and agencies. So even though we see these two sides working together in the overall executive management corps, we recognize their differences. We recognize they have different career paths inside the government, and that they have different organizations that have to be responsible for managing them. The overall theme, however, is that both have to be managed and both have to be filled with highly qualified people. And they both have to be attuned to implementing the president's policies. But I think the political appointee, we have to say, has to have a greater sensitivity toward those policies and to participate in making them as well as carrying them out. But on the other hand, I'm struck over time as how many political appointee positions have become management positions, where the political appointee is responsible for financial management or acquisition or human resource management where the management aspect is something different from just making policy. And so I think there's considerable overlap here, and that's part of the concept of shared responsibility, I think, is for the career and the political appointee to sort out where their strengths are and to play to those strengths to drive the organization's goals.
So as a follow-up, and you kind of alluded to some of this, but what are some of the key challenges to establishing these management cores, and what actions can be taken to do it?
Well, I'll start on that, and then Maureen can join in. I think the biggest challenge surrounds time and attention. And having observed a number of presidential transitions from both the inside and the outside, there's a lot going on, and not always is management at the top of the list. So I think the biggest challenge is for the incoming administration to recognize that they need to address this question sooner rather than later. And then if they then decide to do that, we've provided, we think, a roadmap or a framework that they can use to move forward to manage the managers.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. The amount of time that you can put into thinking about management before the new administration takes office will help smooth out a lot of the wrinkles that could happen after the new administration takes office. So that's why we have sort of short-term goals and then medium-term and then long-term. But in reality, I'm thinking about management and thinking about a way to manage the managers is so necessary, especially when you come to recruiting the right people for those positions. Because if a president can say, these are my objectives, and then, you know, please go out and achieve them. And if you have people actually able to do that, then that takes a lot of weight off of the top management. And they're able to go on and try to create new ideas and go on from there. And so you have sort of a ripple effect, and it's a ripple effect of actually being effective and having government work. So if you start with the beginning of thinking about a way to manage the managers, then your administration starts off far more smoothly and with a lot fewer failures than you would otherwise.
How can we promote the importance of federal executive talent management and management in general? We will explore this question and so much more on our special edition of the Business of Government Hour, A Conversation with Authors returns.